Welcome to the Mindfulness Podcast. This is David Black. My guest is Mr. David Gröning. He is a professor in the Department of Psychology at Heidelberg University in Germany. He and his colleagues from the Max Planck Institute in Berlin recently published an experiment in the journal Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. It tests an app-based intervention, a nudge, a certain type of intervention, to reduce mindless interaction with phone content. The title of that article is Directing Smartphone Use Through the Self-Nudge App, One Sec. Welcome, David. It's great to have you.
Very happy to be here.
It's great. We're on the other different sides of the planet right now. It's so wonderful that we can hang out and do this and I can learn from you. I really liked your article because it linked two of my focal interests, nudges, which is a concept from behavioral economics, and mindfulness, but your angle was mindlessness. And you use these concepts to tackle the problem of mindless phone use. So tell me about your background. What about you and your background led you to conducting an experiment of this focus?
Yeah, I think so. So that's quite interesting. I mean, my professional background is really just psychology. So I started with very traditional, very theoretical cognitive psychology. And then I got more and more interested in more applied uses of especially nudging, learning theory. And at some point I met Frederick Riedel, who is basically the inventor of the concept of this app. So he's like the computer scientist behind everything, right? Making sure that it looks good, that the features work how we want to have them. And I thought this is a super opportunity to actually get even more applied, right? To really go into the real world and use nudging, specifically self-nudging, as like a cognitive psychological concept for greater good in this context.
And so are you attracted to that intervention content? So maybe I'll give a background and tell me if we are on the right track together. So the way I'm interpreting this work, so behavioral economics and nudging, I follow the work of Richard Thaler. You know, there's a famous person where he evolved the concept of designing choice architecture. You know, we're in a world where there's like stimuli everywhere and we are engaging with that. We can make use of that to influence behavior, but in a predictable way. Like we know the direction that we want people to go. Say it's safer driving or making better default options for retirement plans. So that's kind of the work I know. We're talking about the similar work, right? In that respect.
Exactly. Yeah.
And then you're using the term self-nudging. So can you expand on that?
Yeah, sure. So basically what's an interesting development in the last years regarding nudging was that some people try to advance this nudging in its effects. So that's what is meant when we talk about boosting, which basically means not just nudging people, so adapting a choice architecture so that we nudge people toward different behavior, but also to boost people's competency to do this on their own, even though even in situations where we don't have the specific nudge, right? So this is kind of like an advancement. And the self-nudge is interesting because it's something in between, I would say. So the self-nudge is something where the individual that is nudged is actually aware of this concept and also the mechanism and can actively adapt this nudge to their own use, so to speak. So it's something where the individual learns something about their own behavior and at the same time can kind of like change the choice architecture as they want.
Yeah, well said. And for those who aren't as familiar with this field, it may not seem as important as what we're trying to argue right now, but it really is because it got us away from forbidding alternatives, right? So, you know, there was an era where we were like, okay, let's just get rid of everything that seems bad. But then there was the philosophical problem of, well, who's defining what bad is, right? So the whole goal of the nudge program was to, if the person was speaking on behalf of their own best interest, like I don't want to spend 10 hours on my iPhone, what nudge could you provide to increase the level of awareness so that action could be made? Because otherwise, the properties of choice architecture are already in place, which mean you're just going to double down into your use. So you're providing a nudge and saying, if that's in your best interest, we're revealing to you that it might be, and you have like this option to get out of the app. So, and we'll get into that with your intervention content, but I noticed some interesting part about some trends in your introduction. And I thought this was striking. I didn't really think about this. Smartphone users are estimated over 6 billion. So we're almost have global coverage on smartphone use. So we are all experiencing a very similar thing. So I imagine this work has huge impact at the level of scope, right? And then in the US, you're particular to the US, I don't know if it's the same there in Germany, 89% of teenagers have a smartphone. So there's almost no one that we are not talking about here. So was that also striking to you? And you have any additional points on just like the scope of what you're trying to do here?
Yeah, I mean, I was quite surprised by this. So I thought the numbers are high, but before I like dove into this topic specifically and like also thinking about like, is this app even like, does it have an impact? Is this interesting to pursue? I was quite surprised myself that it's so high. And I would totally agree that also, and that's also why we bring this up, by the way, in the paper. I think the age group that's most struggling with this mindless or automatic consumption are really adolescents. So like, children and everybody like up to, I would say, like mid-20s, specifically because that's also something that we can talk about maybe in length. Most of these apps that OneSec tries to control or that people set up to be used in connection to OneSec are actually social media apps. So I think it's 85 to 90% of all apps that are like set up with OneSec are Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and all these kind of social media apps.
And I like your point, this term, automatic consumption. It's so evident for this 89% of teens and 6 billion people using it. I mean, isn't the, if we're talking about choice architecture, the entire choice process in using things like social media is to capture and to create automatic responses. And it seems so like if that is the strategy, we also have to offer people the strategy of getting out of that experience, right? And it's so hard. We know it's hard. So tell me more about that concept and why it's intriguing to you.
So first of all, I totally agree. So I think this is like the general trend that we see with social media apps. So and you can see this even in the most recent apps. So for example, TikTok for me is like way more what I would call frictionless in its use than, for example, Facebook. So with TikTok, you really just have a video, and then you with one quick click, you get to the next video. So the idea is really, and that's also something that YouTube, by the way, adopted with these short YouTube vids, right? So with this new feature that they have, it's basically the same that TikTok uses. The idea is really to make your consumption as frictionless as possible so that you don't think as much about what you're actually doing, meaning more engagement for the platform, for the social media platform, and also way more time spent on the platform.
Yeah, this, I just to phrase this in my behaviorist terms, I think I'm more and more becoming behaviorist, less and less in the domain of psychology. Would it also be fair to say there's no stimulus? Like when you're using an app, there's no stimulus that would actually stop your behavior. There are only a series of stimulus that propagate the behavior. And so the only thing to stop it would be some alternative, like what you're doing. Like you have to interject on the process, or else there is nothing that's going to stop the behavior, which is staring at the screen, scrolling, or pressing next, or whatever it is. There, unless you have a screaming child, or unless you have a friend who interrupts you, there has to be something strong in the environment. So if there's nothing strong in the environment to compete with that, we kind of find ourselves stuck in this architectural design, right? By design, that is a by design choice to keep us engaged. I think you set the stage. I mean, it's fair to think that in a design from a market that tries to engage this mindless form of attention for long periods of time, We should also provide the user with something that can get them out of there, you know, a competing stimulus to get them out of that aimless use. So let's talk about your study then. So you move forward with that. Just generally, what was the goal of this study?
So basically, we have like two studies in this paper, right? One is what I would classify as like an observational study, really, and the other one is an experimental one, which was more going into the details. So for the observational study, our idea was really to just have a first testing of OneSec's actual effects on people's app consumption. And what we did was basically just signing people up for the app. So these were all new users that we tested, and it was like around 300 new users that we screened. And we observed their digital behavior for 6 weeks straight. So what we looked at was basically how often did they open an app in these 6 weeks? When did they do this? What kind of apps did they open? And then also, was OneSec in its direct effect effective, so successful, or did people just go on consuming the app? And what we find in this observational study is basically two effects. The second I find more interesting, but this is very subjective, I guess. So first of all, the overall effect that we found was that people, on average, reduced their app openings, so their attempts to open an app, by 57%. So more than half of consumption, you could say, are reduced. The very interesting part about this observational study, I think, is that this overall effect comes from two different effects. One would be what I would call direct effect. So this is really people click on an app, they intend to consume the app, to go to this app. And then OneSec interferes with its intervention. And then people say, you know what, I don't want to consume anymore. So it's like a successful interference, so to speak. But the other effect, which we would call an indirect effect, really shows that people that's our interpretation, seem to adapt their behavioral pattern of consumption. So that people also reduce the general attempts to open an app. So in the first week, what you have is, on average, people open or try to open their apps 170 times, I think. And this gets reduced to around 100 times in the sixth week. So it's not just that OneSec directly interferes with your consumption, but it seems that people kind of like are more aware or like have or change the behavioral pattern of consumption in a way. And I think this is actually very exciting to see that this is kind of like a learning or maybe an adaptation effect. And also in this very short span of time, so it's really just 1.5 months, which I think is not so much, especially for longitudinal studies. So I think that's really the very interesting point of this observational study.
And the program that you're, this intervention piece, the nudge that we're talking about, just so people know how to find this if they're interested. OneSec is what we're saying. So one, O-N-E and then S-E-C. And I'm assuming mm-hmm. there is a reason for calling it OneSec, short for second. What do you know the history there?
Yeah. So the idea is basically, I would say it's like a description of like, hold on for a second, kind of. So the whole idea of OneSec is basically, just to describe the intervention very quickly, is to have an interference within your intention to consume an app. So the intervention per se is very, very simple. So that if you click on an app, the only thing OneSec does is it shows you a screen before you get to the intended app. It shows you a screen and you see like a moving animation that holds for like 10 seconds. And then after that, you get the choice or the option to dismiss consuming the app. So it's a very simple thing, but this mental friction, so this kind of like time delay, so this holding up for a second, seems to be quite effective on its own.
Yeah, this may say something about the nature of attention in relation to behavior. Yeah. That one screen that just basically makes you pause, I can imagine for many people, if it's 10 seconds, the nature of attention has already moved on to something else. So it's like, okay, it's not my phone. Let me look at my computer, or let me go for a walk. And that's pretty brilliant. And that's why we're calling it nudges, because we're not asking people to do heavy duty lifting. We just, by understanding some fundamental principles of attention, of human nature, we might just be able to push people away, nudge them away from their phone. So that's pretty smart. And it's comedic a little bit about how humans use their attention. So let's go into this intervention then, as you used it in your study. So you used this one sex. So what was the setup for delivering these interventions in the experiment?
So that's maybe why the experiment is interesting. The intervention itself, we split it into three different kinds of interventions, which are all, you could all categorize as like mental friction interventions, but they were kind of like with a different intent. So the first intervention is really just a message for you. So it's kind of a message to make you aware of what you're about to do, right? So take away the unaware from the unaware consumption, and just make you aware that you are just about to consume an app. And what kind of app? Then you have this time delay, which is these 10 seconds. So that's kind of like the second kind of intervention. And then you have what I would call is like the traditional nudge, I guess. So the traditional adaptation of like a choice architecture, which is giving people the option to, with just one click, dismiss consuming the app, right? And in this experiment, so the experimental study, what we wanted to find out more about is how crucial each of these three interventions was. So what we did was we let people consume videos. So the setup was quite similar to the environment you have in TikTok. So people like consumed videos, and they were like automatically clicked forward to the next video if they didn't intervene. And what we did was for these consumption periods of the videos, we had people sorted into different conditions. One condition was about the message intervention, one about the time delay intervention, one about the option to dismiss intervention. And then we had one control condition where people didn't get any intervention, and we had a combination of these three interventions also. And what you can see is, first of all, we measured how many videos people actually watched till the end, and also how long people watched these videos. And what you could see for both of these measurements is that especially the time delay and the option to dismiss, these two interventions seem to be very crucial on their own. So both reduce very, very substantially people's number of videos and also the time they consumed in the study. While the message per se didn't really have a very large effect on its own, it seems to be, so my interpretation of this is the message, I think, is a very good addition to the other two interventions, because it kind of like prepares the user to like what's about to come. But on its own, I think it's really just too small of an interference, because it's really just this message, right? So you don't have like any holding up for some seconds. You don't have an like an alternative to click on to dismiss. It's really just an awareness message.
And on screens, that makes sense to me as well, because with the ad paradigms that are often used with marketing on all the screens that we've experienced through our lifetime, there's competing stimuli as like ads and signups and everything on our screen. And we tend to be pretty good at ignoring all of those things. So if it's just a message, I think we've already been conditioned to ignore other stimuli that aren't as interesting in the moment. So that's good. And I like your friction idea. The friction idea makes me think about the inverse of what we try to do with nudges in a way. So a nudge, we're trying to remove all the barriers and all the effort that a human has to put in to doing the thing that would make them best off. So let's imagine we want people to sign up for retirement plans. And if we send them a pile of paperwork, we have learned that that's not going to help, because they have to understand the words on the paper. They have to make the signatures. They have to send in the forms. They have to, you know, go through the hoops So instead, if you do things like automatic enrollment and then allow people to opt out, you've tried to set up a system that has zero friction, right? So you're setting up a system knowing that the system is in place that can that nudges towards continual automated use. You're saying, let's add friction into that system, right? So we actually slow. And I think the authors of Nudge refer to this as sludge. So in a way, you're adding sludge to the user experience. And sludge, of course, would be to like slow down the behavior that you think is that the person might think is least beneficial to them, like endless scrolling for an hour is an example. So that's cool. And then they have the option to dismiss, which is really important, right? So this was another piece to what the app allows them to do. So what did you learn about that option to be able to dismiss? Does this close out the app and the user is closing out the app when they press dismiss? It's like an easy pop-up dismiss and they're done with it. What did you find there?
Yeah, exactly. So we tried to, so the idea behind the combination, right, especially the mental friction, so this time delay and then the option to dismiss, was to make it as, let's say, as negative an experience to wait, and then also as easy, or make the behavior as easy as possible to get out of the negative experience. So the option to dismiss is really just a very prominent button, let's say, after the 10 seconds of delay, where you can just click on it and like get out of the app. So the app closes automatically and you've never been on the app per se. And I think these two are actually a very powerful combination, because people are getting quite the negative experience with waiting, and then they can just like with a very easy click get out of there.
And you collected behavioral data. This is really important to know, because relying on people's just self-report of phone use, I imagine it's very troublesome. We couldn't really trust people. I imagine if I reported on my phone use yesterday, I have no idea about if I regulated my behavior or not. But so what was this measure that you used and why was it important?
So fully agreed. So we specifically focused on digital behavior just because there are these well-known weaknesses of self-reports. I mean, we also asked for self-reports. So people also filled in like a very short pre-survey and then a post-survey. And we also had this in there. So we also asked people about how happy are you with your consumption now? We asked them about how problematic they find their app consumption. So we also had these in there, and we also find effects here. But I totally agree that this is, it's better to also have the digital behavior measurement. And what we here did was, for this first study, was quite simple. So we really just, what we measured was what kind of apps people consumed. And then we recorded every time people opened an app, and then also timestamped their action afterwards. So did they, after having seen 1 sec, dismiss the app? So didn't consume, or did they actually go on consuming? So opened the app. And just by these, like this binary measurement, we tried to calculate the effect that we report in the paper.
But being very important that you're actually capturing these data from the participant's phone.
Right.
That's correct. Yeah. So it's not the research team that's making observation. It's just the automated collection of data, which is important, because you can imagine how much we would all err on trying to either assess someone else's use or our own use. So I thought that was outstanding as a way to be able to capture real use of apps. Because even if someone originally would maybe think they should decline their use, over time, they would probably forget and not be super attuned to the fact that these data are being tracked. So making it a good measure in that way as well. For me, some of these figures are very interesting, because you do mention the self-report, and at times we do need this, because you're asking a person basically their subjective experience of changing their behavior, and is their life better basically now? So did people's lives from your results, did people report feeling better about what they were doing with their time?
Yeah, very much so. So I think what was interesting in these subjective ratings was, first of all, so we had these let's say these basic measurements where we ask people about their satisfaction regarding their app consumption. So this went up substantially. So people were, after the 6 week, they were way happier with how they consumed on their phone. They also thought that their consumption was less problematic. But what I found also interesting is that we see some effects on kind of like a meta perceptual level. So people also indicated to realize how problematic phone use actually is. So that also went up, that like people's awareness of the problem that is app or smartphone use. So that was interesting. And I mean, we also asked people for their consumption time, but that might be quite confounded with this being self-reports, but this also went down. So people also reported to, I think on average, like 1 or 2 hours per week, to consume 1 or 2 hours per week less than before.
Well, and this idea of becoming aware of our behavior, the reason why it's often hard for us to ever change is because we've never quantified our behavior. We just like go on living and we're like, well, I am a person who tends to be on my phone now and then, but it's never quantified. I'm a person who tends to eat to a certain degree. It's never quantified. And so the thing where this became an applied practice that was useful was when some of the phone apps were able to track time, right? So now you have created an actual dimension. And when people see that, I've asked my students to do this as well, because they're like, I mean, I'm not a heavy user. I'm just kind of on my phone now and then. I'm like, okay, the only way to know is to create a dimension from this variable. So I say, let's create a dimension, use this app and track. And they will come back and be like, I was on my social media apps for 6 hours. Wow, I need to change my life. And I didn't need to say you should change or maybe you should take up some other behaviors. I never had to say anything, because once you're right, the organism realizes that, you know, 6 hours of its day is spent doing kind of mindless behavior. It's the intervention in itself. So yeah. I'm glad you're making people aware, giving people the option to utilize their time in a way that they prefer. So what would you take? Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Yep. Maybe one thing to add, why I think this, like, one thing per se is quite effective in like making people realize this, is because the here the people learn by experience, right? So they with every time that one sick shows up, people have this like negative experience of like realizing that they yet again try to consume an app. And I think this is way, I mean, there's research on this that learning by experience is way more effective, or at least impactful, than just learning by description. And so I think this is also interesting, or like an interesting advancement from just showing people their screen time to actually letting them experience like how often they actually attempt to consume Instagram per day.
Yeah, and maybe those together, because you're using these combinatorial treatments or exposures. Mm-hmm. And from what we just said, if you combined, here is your average baseline. So it inspires this understanding of the necessary change, perhaps, when someone realizes they're spending 6 hours a day on their phone, plus the nudge that you are offering. Have you thought about combining those yet? That seems that it might be added potency to your model here.
Yeah, I mean, I wanted to add this. So this is something that is already, I think, in like the newest version of OneSec, that people can also have like a little like screening time and like a little dashboard with like some relevant information. Also, not just how long they consume specific apps, but also their number of attempts, so that you can see like that you have attempted to click on Instagram 30 times a day for the last two weeks. So it's very visual.
Yeah, this is really good. And especially right now, for a culture who's really interested in real-time feedback, this is like the equivalent to continuous glucose monitoring, but we're like doing continuous social app monitoring. And it's very useful because then we can look at our day and at least appraise like, oh, the question comes, do I want to do this? And without that, we're in this nebulous world of just behaving and making assumptions about what's happening. And we usually tend to underestimate the behaviors that we would otherwise not do. So very interesting there. Maybe you get a chance to do it again. Do you have any future plans for next stages on this work? Are you blossoming out to other areas?
I mean, so two things that we are specifically interested in is, first of all, analyzing past data from users. So because you already said this, right? With this study, we have the problem that people, at least to a certain degree, are aware of that they are participants in the study. So what we're doing now is we are planning, and this, of course, this has like some ethical planning to do, but we intend to ask people if we can use their past data regarding 1/6, so that we really have data that is completely free of these demand effects that you usually get when people participate in the study. So that is one thing that we are quite interested in. And the other thing is to experiment a little bit with the interventions, with the features that we have. So, for example, changing the message and also changing the time delay. So that would also be something that is a future direction to see if, like, these 10 seconds, because these are quite, like, the 10 seconds are quite intuitively chosen for now, to see if we can get like an optimal kind of like time delay, anything from 5 seconds to 30 seconds.
Excellent. Well, thank you for this work. I think we all need it. I need it. We have 6 billion phone users, and I don't think the sophistication of the choice architecture is going to become any easier to deal with. Mm-hmm. So you're helping us kind of manage our time. And do we want to make a final note? You and I kind of also converge on this idea of mindfulness training, more properly for meditation. And you didn't look at that in this study per se, because you're just trying to get people to be less mindless. But if we kind of, and I don't know if it's the perfect metaphor in the transition, but like, you are in a way bringing people back into the present, right? Because we're not mindlessly scrolling. We are kind of getting out of that zone and then asking the question, what do I truly intend to do? And some of this is the language of beginner's practice. Like, we sit with intention because we are trying to be present and fully aware of the sensory experience of now, rather than like getting lost in some trail of videos. Where does your interest kind of collide? I know my interest collides there. Do you have any points on that?
I mean, I think what's interesting in this regard is this indirect effect that we see with 1/6, because my interpretation of this is that what we've the type of consumption that we reduce is this mindless automatic consumption. But I think what still remains, and I think this is actually a good thing, because like, app consumption per se is not bad. It's really about like what kind of, like how I consume my apps. What I think remains is this deliberate consumption, so mindful consumption. So something where I have like a very clear goal. So I want to connect with my friends. I want to message some friends to, I don't know, meet them next weekend. So some things that actually make sense, and that these apps are actually useful for. And I think these are the instances where 1/6 doesn't really intervene with, because people have a clear plan. They like want to write some messages, so they plan this. Then 1/6 interferes. I mean, this is kind of annoying, but people will like hold on for these 10 seconds and then just go on and message these people, fulfilling their plan. But this mindless and automatic consumption, that's exactly what 1/6 like targets to reduce. And I think this is quite interesting to see, that maybe people get overall more mindful of when consumption is actually useful and productive, and when it's quite negative. And you see kind of like an adaptation, a learning effect, where people learn to to crystallize more, or like go more in the direction of deliberate consumption, mindful consumption, and leave out this automatic and mindless consumption of apps.
Yeah, this point on doing things deliberately is important. And I wonder if you've thought about this, and if it kind of still fits within nudge. Let's say that the screen pops up and it says, are you sure this is how you want to spend your time? I know that's not what you did, but it's something along those lines, right? And if the person's being deliberative about their time, which I think most of us, and hearing from my students and other adults and family, what they want to do is like, I didn't actually want to do this. I just had no competing behavior to produce, right? I'm bored. I'm sitting here. And it's been so reinforcing to always use my phone. What about if we added something in the nudge about alternative behaviors? right? Because I know you mentioned that the only alternative behavior that we might offer is to do some other intentional media or app-based or web-based thing to look at. But what if we actually use the nudge to be like, here's a meditation timer. Did you prefer to like practice a meditation or to do some yoga? Or do you want to do 10 squats right now? Do you want to exercise? Do you want to go plan a healthy meal? You know what I mean? I don't want to, it seems like we could get caught in a cycle where we just reinforce the single medium when there are so many, when the nudge can be used to actually get away from the medium.
Yeah, I mean, this is super interesting. And I have to say, so this is already one project that we plan to do. So instead of having this option to dismiss, you have the option to dismiss, but you also have the option to choose an alternative. And this alternative can, of course, also be digital. So we also have, like some collaboration that we plan with some learning apps, for example, so that people don't spend their time just consuming social media, but actually, I don't know, learning a new language, for example. So that could be one alternative where you link one sec to this app and people just with one click can go to this app. But we also plan to actually do exactly what you just proposed. So suggest to people certain activities that are not linked to any digital consumption. So, for example, meditation or going for a run or maybe doing your dishes, if this is useful.
Yeah, get closer to the structuring around a value system. It could be a very interesting approach. Yeah, have you called your mom today? Maybe one.
That might work. Yeah.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. Well, it's been wonderful talking with you. So many useful ways to apply nudges. You're finding a way to perhaps help 6 billion people who might kind of be in this attention trap to start nudging. And I know there's small steps, but start nudging us. And you showed with your data, like even if it's minutes reduced, even if it's number of times that we aren't reinforcing by pressing that button. And that button is so strong because it reinforces with all these images that are endless. So you're helping us find small ways to move against that with some friction here, with some sludge. I really appreciate your time. We'll conclude for today. Thank you, David Gruning, there in Germany. And listeners can find our episodes at goamra.org and subscribe on Spotify and Audible. Bye now.